This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:35 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana Chuang and Chen Li. It's looking to be a lovely Friday morning. In the meantime, though, we're turning our attention over to the Big Blue. No, that's a different company. Anyway, sorry. The U.S. We're turning our attention to the U.S. So while the U.S. economy ended 2021 with its GDP expanding at a healthy 6.9% in the fourth quarter, the momentum has slowed significantly amid a surge in COVID-19 infections at the start of the year, disrupted supply chains and soaring inflation.
Yeah, the Fed this month raised policy interest rates by 25 basis points, the first time it's done so in more than 3 years. And it's also signaled an aggressive stance that has left, of course, people like the bond market investors fearing a recession down the road. We've also seen the widely tracked U.S. Treasury yield curve briefly inverting on Tuesday for the first time in 3 years. And of course, now we've got the rising oil prices and this ongoing war in Europe thanks to Putin's invasion of the Ukraine. So there's a lot of questions about whether the U.S. economy can maintain its positive growth.
So for some thoughts and analysis on the outlook of the U.S. economy, we have on the line with us Preston Caldwell, head of U.S. economics at Morningstar. Preston, good morning. Thanks for joining us today. Can we start with Fed policy? Now, the Fed has the twin targets of inflation at 2% and job stability. It's also looking to guide the economy for a soft landing to avoid recession. Do you think this is achievable given the current circumstances, especially since inflation has hit a four-decade high?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, the probability of a recession has obviously increased, but I still don't think it's anything resembling a base case. A recession is mainly a worry in an environment of interest rate hikes. Whenever inflation expectations are high, that means that inflation's embedded in the economy and it's hard to extricate, and it requires a steep recession in order to bring inflation back down, like we saw in the early 1980s with the U.S. and many other developed economies. But we don't see high inflation expectations right now, and so we don't think this will be a costly disinflation with a recession.
Yeah, Preston, if Jay Powell goes through with seven rate hikes by the end of this year, how can they make anything other than a hard landing?
Well, I think they're going to calibrate the number of interest rate hikes and also how they treat long-term yields in terms of deploying quantitative tightening, unloading their asset portfolio. They're going to calibrate that according to what the economy needs. So regardless of how many rate hikes are eventually deployed, the point is that, you know, for a given level of inflation that you're trying to get to, they're trying to get back to a 2% target, their 2% target. The costs of reaching that inflation are dependent on mainly inflation expectations. As long as inflation expectations don't stay at today's current elevated levels, then you can have a relatively costless disinflation. And just keep in mind, I mean, if you're talking about, you know, seven rate hikes, that's only bringing the interest rate in the U.S. basically back to its neutral level. So policy has been very accommodative up until now. And even with these rate hikes, it's still not going to be overly hawkish.
While waiting for the labor data to be out tomorrow, Jerome Powell actually said that the U.S. labor market remains very tight, and this could create the threat of a wage price spiral. What would be the consequences of this? And shouldn't the labor market correct itself eventually if the U.S. economy slows?
Well, I think it's correct to pay the most attention to the labor market for all the attention that's, you know, given to oil and supply chain disruptions. For there to be sustainably high inflation in the economy, you have to have sustained tightness in the labor market and wage inflation and so on. So that is the right part of the economy to look at. But I do agree with your point that the labor market should become less tight over the course of 2022, even as more workers continue to return to their jobs. I think a slowdown in the rate of hiring will ease pressure on wages. And of course, in last month's report, we already saw a slowdown in wage growth. So we'll see what comes out tomorrow.
Yeah, and Preston, part of the inflationary concerns in the US is tied to energy prices and oil staying above $100 a barrel. We've seen how Joe Biden has released 180 million barrels of oil from its from your SPR, actually, your petroleum reserves. Will that have any bearing at all in terms of cooling down energy prices in the US?
It will help modestly, so I suppose that's why oil traded down today, you know, around $5 or so. 180 million barrels, if it's deployed over a, you know, a let's say 180-day timeline, then that's a million barrels per day for that 180 days. And that's 1% of global oil demand. So that is significant, especially in the context of, you know, Russia's supply disruption being, you know, potentially 2 million barrels per day is close to the center of estimates that I've seen. So it will help plug the market in the short run. But, you know, the issue is, though, that it's a limited time horizon. And, you know, because we have an efficient market, you know, it doesn't have as much impact on the market in terms of prices as a permanent shift in supply would.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, the narrative, the sense is that oil prices are high because of supply issues, not because of demand issues. So within that 6-month timeline, do you foresee that U.S. shale producers can step in and fill that void?
That is happening. It's not happening as quickly as we would have expected. Given the experience of the past 10 years or so, in which we've had lower oil prices thanks to relatively flexible, low-cost U.S. production. But it is happening, albeit at a slower pace. So that's going to be one factor. Another potential is a deal being reached with Iran, lifting sanctions, which would increase supply from there. And other producers are stepping up too, but you know they producers outside of the U.S. tend to move even slower than the U.S. does, so that may be having an impact more towards the end of the year.
Preston, could we get your thoughts on the outlook in terms of the pace and quantum of the normalization of the Fed fund rate? What do you think is going to influence the way the Fed moves forward based on all these pressures that are going on in the economy at the moment?
Well, I think that the Fed is at some point we are going to probably see a 50 basis point rate hike. So, you know, they are going to move aggressively at first, but towards the latter half of the year, I think they're going to assess the trends in inflation. And I'm certainly hoping and I do think we will see some light at the end of the tunnel by the second half of the year. In terms of supply chain pressures easing, and that will, I think, ultimately lead the Fed to not hike quite as much as some people fear. You know, there's some forecasts out there projecting, you know, as much as 300 basis points in rate hikes by a year from now, and I think that's a little too high. That there will be signs that some of these transitory inflation pressures are easing, and the Fed will respond to that.
Yeah, so Preston, I think Jay Powell is facing this maelstrom of factors in terms of his decision-making process. The yield curves on the short and long-term bonds, the twos and tens, suggest that some kind of slowdown is on the horizon. How does that play into his, you know, his ability to decide prudently on how much and how quickly to raise rates?
Well, the 2-10 yield curve spread is one that has correlated very highly with U.S. recessions in the past, but that relationship I don't think is highly statistically significant. And if you look outside of the U.S., for example, it doesn't really hold off across a wide spectrum of countries. And I don't think it's a causal relationship. It's more of a it's a correlative relationship of anything. So I don't think we're doomed to have a recession, even if that yield curve indicator does invert. But I do think, you know, that the Fed does have this large asset portfolio of longer dated bonds. and it will seek to unload that portfolio in a manner that keeps the yield curve in terms of the 2-10, or especially in terms of the 10-year versus the Fed funds rate, from inverting. And it will do what's necessary to keep longer dated yields up slightly, which makes sense because that's a key way in which monetary policy impacts the economy, is through affecting longer duration borrowing rates.
So what's your outlook for the economy? And is your forecast of the GDP vastly different from the street expectation of 3.5% of 2022?
Well, no, we're pretty close to the street for 2022. We're at 3.7%. But on a 4 to 5 year time horizon, we are significantly above the other long-term forecasts. It's hard to assemble exactly a consensus because much of Wall Street's a short-term focus. They don't publish a longer-term forecast. But for the collection of consensus forecasts I've assembled, we're expecting about 2% more cumulative growth through 2025. So that is significant over that time horizon. And that's mainly based off of our analysis of the supply side of the economy, which really on a medium to longer run is determinative of where GDP is going to go. We think there's room for a lot more labor market expansion than other major forecasters expect over a medium to long run.
Preston, thanks very much for your time. That was Preston Caldwell, head of U.S. economics at Morningstar, talking to us about his outlook for the U.S. economy. I think sounding pretty optimistic for the longer term, if not the shorter term. I think there's just a lot of different factors that come into play in seeing how these things pan out. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.